Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Tony Award winner, two-time Grammy Award winner, and two-time Academy Award nominee Jim Dale has a brand new one-man show, Just Jim Dale. It has him doing what he does best, presenting an evening of song and dance and stories. He'll recount a lifetime of showbiz tales from his start on the famed British Music Hall stage through his Broadway triumphs in Barnum and Me and My Girl, just to name a few, to his experiences narrating all seven Harry Potter audiobooks and having his voice star in television's Pushing Daisies. He'll perform Just Jim Dale at Helsinki Hudson as part of their Helsinki on Broadway series this Sunday, April 6th at 7 p.m., prior to his 12-week off-Broadway run with the Roundabout Theater Company at the Laura Pels Theater in New York City, beginning May 15th. It is a great pleasure to welcome Jim Dale to the Roundtable. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, you've said it all, so thank you for having me, and good night.
At what point do you think, I want to do this type of show where I'm telling my stories and singing my songs?
I think it was because it would be nice to put on tapes, you know, for the grandchildren. That's how it started off. I have five grandchildren in England, and I thought, well, some of them have never seen me on stage, and they may never see me on stage. So let's put it all on some sort of tape, some sort of memory that they can play back whenever they want to, and perhaps play back to their grandchildren one day. And so that was the main reason. There's, you know, it's been a long, long life in show business. It's a big tree, and I've sort of explored every branch of it. And so that experience has been squashed into 90 minutes with no intermission, just 90 minutes of jumping from one thing to another, but mainly, I suppose, mainly giving all the credit to my first experience of theater, which was in the old days when I visited the British music halls. And they were the ones that, those shows were the ones that encouraged me to focus on humor, on making people laugh, on wanting to do something to get out of a small town and perhaps become somebody rather than just another face in the crowd. And so I've been doing it, as I said, now for six, since I became professional for 60 years. That was the first time I became a pro. And that's a long time. And so it's been quite a problem to pick out what should we talk about? What should we bring back in the way of memories? And what can we fill that 90 minutes with that is the funniest or the strangest or the most unusual or the most romantic, name it. So we've been doing that over the past three or four long months with Richard Maltby, who is my director, and he's the one who directed Ain't Misbehaving on Broadway. Richard is just a brilliant lyricist, and of course when you analyze a script, it's like having a lot of lyrics without any music. So this script is now 12,500 words long. And so we've literally picked at it for the last three or four months, and we put them into the right order. We've edited out the unnecessary ones, and I hope what we've got left is just a very good example of what British humor has meant to a young guy who started life as Jim Smith.
When you talk about British humor and realizing that point that you had made it, what was that like of saying, I have found my place?
I think it happens gradually. I was never discovered and made into a, well, I was once, yes. But I never went through life thinking, I want to be a big star next week or next month. I knew that the most important thing was to have a love of something, and it didn't matter where it took you or how much it paid you, as long as you were allowed to do it and learn from it and add things to it. And so my career has been learning from the word go, and I'm still learning. I'm never, ever satisfied. To give you an example, the Harry Potter audiobooks, of which I recorded seven, yes, they became very popular, but I have never heard one word of my finished audiobook, and I wouldn't want to, because in films one is allowed to do take three or four or take 50 or 60 before you get it right. In the audiobook world, it's take one. You keep talking until you make a mistake or have to stop. And that, to me, doesn't give me much chance of polishing that sentence to make it sound better. Usually what happens in an audiobook is you read the book mainly to get the voices of the characters and where they occur and to invent those. Then you go into the studio to record the book, and that's probably the very first time you've read it. You've just been interested in creating the voices. So I would never, ever want to listen to myself and without criticizing it and saying, oh, I could have done so much better if I'd have been given the chance.
It's hard to believe that it could get much better than that, though. I mean, you brought that audiobook world to a new level because of the books were massive and there were so many characters and you were doing them all.
Well, they wanted an English actor who, this is a funny story, we don't even include this in the show, but they wanted an English actor who could perhaps do voices. And someone said, well, there's a guy called Jim Dale, he's off Broadway in an English play called Travels with My Aunt. There's just four people in it, only three of them do the talking, one doesn't even talk. But they do 33 different characters between them, and they thought, wow, that's the sort of guy we need. So they phoned me up and they said, would you like to do the audiobook of Harry Potter? I said, yes. So I signed the contract, and it was only then one of them said, so, how many characters did you play in that play? And I said, just the aunt and the nephew. There's a terrible silence. They said, what about the other 31 characters? I said, just the other two guys did that between them. So I really did get the job under false pretenses, and I'm thrilled I did, because it's been a lovely journey, you know, for the last 10 years of knowing children at the age of 7 or 8 who have grown up now. They're 15, they're 16, they're 17, and your voice has been part of their life for the last 8 or 9, 10 years, and that's a joy.
It's interesting because even when I'm using that as an example of growing up and listening to those stories and having you tell them, that for me, when I was listening to them, and then when I saw the films, I was like, well, that's not what Dumbledore sounds like. That's not what. Because it was different. You had created something, which is, and given my profession, I guess that's what I noticed, because you were able to use radio to its fullest.
Well, don't forget, the books were recorded long before the films were made. I remember my agent saying, well, everybody who's anybody in England is sort of appearing in these films. Wouldn't it be nice if you could have a small role as one of the characters? I said, yes, why don't you send them my tapes of Harry Potter? So my agent sent the tapes, and a year went by and we hadn't heard anything as to whether they wanted Jim Dale to be in the film. And so my agent put in a call to the director's secretary and said, did Chris Columbus ever listen to the tapes of Jim Dale? And she said, oh, yes, yes, he often listens to them to see what kind of voice the characters should have. So that was a compliment. And it really doesn't matter that I didn't do the films. The fact is that I was the only one that was doing the book, the audio books. And it was my voice that was creating, I think, in one book, 143 characters, and then in another book, the following book, 147 characters. That we do have a connection, though. My son, Adam Dale, is a helicopter cameraman, and he did all the helicopter work. And my son, Alfie, actually was in the studio standing in for Harry Potter when they had to go to school. And because they did, then they would film him in shadow. So that could be anybody. Alfie was the one shot in shadow. Of course, Alfie couldn't boast that he was in the film, because his friends would say, well, we didn't see you. He said, well, that's the idea. I was the one in shadow. So the family, the Dale family, has been connected to Harry Potter all these years.
The one cool thing is you really got to read them before anybody else. Did you have any interaction with J.K. Rowling?
Not much. J.K. Rowling, when she heard that they'd hired me to do it, she knew my work in England because, well, I'd been around for a long, long time, since I was 17 and a half. I became a pop singer when I was 22 in England, and from there to the National Theatre, and onto a series of films called the Carry On films, which are so popular in England. They were made 40 years ago, 33 films for the cinema. And I was in 14 of them, and these films are still being shown in England 2 or 3 times a week or a month, I should say. And everybody knows these films. It's like All in the Family. It's like a MASH. They are so familiar with the Carry On film, they will watch them time and time and time again. So really, Jim Dale has never aged as far as the audience in England is concerned. They still see Jim as a young idiot in these films. I played the twit most times. I just played the idiot. But it's nice to have that, you know, in your history. But even then, in this one-man show, I do not have time to even mention the 7 or 8 years that I did the Carry On films. We've got so much material we've had to choose from. Perhaps if we ever take this show to London, then we'll get the chance to include, you know, the stories, and there are some very wonderful stories about those early Carry On days. But in America, I decided to edit them out because they're not shown on American television except about 4 o'clock in the morning. That's when I'm usually accosted by somebody who hasn't had a wink of sleep, who says, "Hey, man, didn't I see you at about 4 o'clock this morning?" Anyway.
But we record this interview in New York, and I assume that Broadway is very much a part of the show, has been very much a part of your life. And coming here and working here, what did that mean at the time?
Well, in England, it was a different kettle of fish. And London is the place where you can go to, you go into theater as an actor. You also have television studios in London. You also have the film studios in and around London. So you can spend a lot of your life living in London, participating in all those three venues. Over here, television and film is really in Los Angeles. I'd had enough of being, and this sounds silly, but it's true, of being recognized. When I was a pop singer or the idiot from the Carry On films, it's not very nice later on to be grabbed by the collar by somebody in the street saying, "Hey, it's that silly bugger from the Carry On films." It's not nice to be mobbed by people who see you on stage as a pop singer and think you're public property. I hated being recognized. I love it on stage, but not when people get into my private life. So it was a choice of, do I go in for that in America? I have no interest in films or television anymore. I made 28 films in England, but over here I think I've made 2 in 30 years. So theater was where I knew that I could perhaps have, this was my love to start with. Play theater, just be a theater actor. If I'm out of New York by 30 miles, nobody knows me, and I can just be part of the community as I am up in Putnam County. Nobody bothers you up there. You don't have to do anything except be yourself. You don't have to hide away behind sunglasses or a wig or always travel in a car with darkened windows, as a lot of stars do. I know a lot of stars who hate the fact they can't switch it off just for one day and just be a normal human being, and I pity them.
I think that's fascinating, because I even think of your television work in Pushing Daisies, it's just the voice.
That's right, and so is Harry Potter. So I can go anywhere. In fact, this is a true story. My wife, Julie, and I, we went for coffee, and we're passing one of the McDonald's places or something. And I walked in, and a couple of kids standing there, about 8 or 9 years of age. And I started to order my coffee, and I looked at them, and they were goggle-eyed. They were looking at, and one of them said, Are you? I said, yes, I am. He said, Oh, can you order a hamburger like Dumbledore for me? And so there I was in ordering this kid a hamburger in the voice of Dumbledore, and the other one wanted his hamburger in the voice of Dobby. So it was lovely. That's it. But they didn't know who I was, which was great.
When it comes to this 90 minutes and this celebration of what you have accomplished over these many decades, for you, your great role, is there a great role, a great stage role that you are especially proud of?
All of them. I've spent a lifetime in the theater of working with good scripts. It has to be a good script. It has to be good writing. It has to be a good director. And hopefully he's going to cast a good crowd around you, or you're going to be part of a good crowd. It happened at the National Theatre. I was surrounded by such talent, not necessarily did I learn from doing things, but by watching as well, being at the rehearsal, watching Olivier, watching Paul Scofield, watching the greats, how they develop characters. And that was the fun of it all. But throughout my career, every role has been a challenge, hopefully, and every role has been something that I really wanted to do. And there's not one role I can look back on and say, I wish I hadn't done that. Not one.
That seems like that's a nice place to be.
It is a comforting place to be, you know, because what happens is if you've got an instinct, go with your own instinct. But only go with it until it lets you down. Once it lets you down, then go along with somebody else's instinct. But until then, trust your own instinct if it hasn't let you down. And I've gone along with mine, and it works.
So what can people expect from Just Jim Dale at Helsinki on Hudson?
I hope they're just going to come along with as many laughs that they can have in their tum and just let them release them throughout the evening. It's a lot of fun. You mentioned dancing at the very beginning. Well, okay, that's what's done. I did 6 years of ballet, tap, ballroom, judo, tumbling, you name it. But in this particular show, there might be 3 or 4 steps, but I assure you, there ain't no Fred Astaire up there anymore. Not at my age.
But you move around, and that's fine. But we come for the stories, and we come for the music.
Yes, these are all, most of the stories are real. These are the stories that have happened throughout my career. I don't think it's name dropping. There are a few names in it, but it's just a collection of the experiences that you've gone through, the people you've met, the various places you've been to, and the sort of songs that you've sung over the years in the various musicals, etc. And add it all up together, it's just Jim Dale.
It is a delight to have you with us. A reminder that Just Jim Dale will be performed at Helsinki Hudson on Sunday at 7 o'clock. And you can find out more information about that show as well as the off-Broadway run, which will go for 12 weeks beginning May 15th at our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Jim Dale, a delight to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.